Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I'm joined with Cody Thompson, our co-host. How you doing, Cody?
Doing great.
You're out of town. We're on Zoom again. I noticed last week that every once in a while, some funny sounds came out. I guess that's what happens when we're doing this remotely, but it seems to work pretty well. It's great to see you online. We've got Tracy, our producer, on mic. How you doing, Tracy?
I'm doing great.
And Matt, our engineer, is not on mic. He's in the other room. It's good to see him there, though. So, Cody, what are we going to talk about today? What's our topic?
Today, it's called Selling Tips for Life.
That's right. Selling Tips for Life, because so much of life is about selling in the truest sense of the word. It's about presenting our ideas to people in a way that provokes them to act. And there's nothing cheesy or manipulative about that, though I know some people can go about the process of selling with poor intentions. But let's assume that you, our audience, are not one of those people, and that you just want to get better at presenting yourself and your ideas to customers, clients, prospective employers, or even friends and family members. We all sell. Now, we know that there are listeners who are light years ahead of us on how to actually sell. There are salespeople that listen to us. I know a few of them. And so they know a lot more about selling. What we're going to do today is just share some of our insights about effectively convincing others of something we believe in. And I'm going to draw on some of the things that I do when I do presentations and speeches to try to get people bought in for whatever that's worth. And I hope it's worth something. All right. So let's dive in. Cody, our first piece of advice, our first tip, and we're not sure how long this is going to take. We might have to break this episode up into two parts, but our first piece of advice is huge. It's something that I learned about years ago in a book on leadership, and it's always anticipate people's objections. That's the first thing you have to do is you have to anticipate people's objections. What does that mean to you, Cody?
One of the things that as we talked about this episode, I was so excited about is typically people tend to say like, oh, I could never be in sales. They think it's just a job. Like, oh, but as you pointed out, like we're all in some level of sales as it relates to presenting ideas, even in our families or on our teams. It doesn't mean you're going out and closing a deal necessarily, but you're closing a deal around ideas. And so as we started, you know, asking you questions and you started, you know, putting this out there, I think these tips I use all the time that I learned from you that I think are super effective. And this first one you talked about, anticipating objections, this is about trying your best, like emotionally understanding where the person you're talking to is coming from, and then framing up any possible objections and getting them out of the way at the very beginning of the conversation, whether that's your team or your kids or your wife, to say, hey, I know that when I'm what I'm about to say might strike you this way. And we'll give some examples of that, but I think you just lead with the objections and try to move them out of the way so you're not presenting the material and then they're objecting afterwards.
Right. And you have to do this first, because until you've let them know that you understand what they're thinking, until you can break down that first barrier, they're just hearing wah, 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 wah. And they're thinking about, oh, here we go. And so you need to first tear down that wall of their objections. And to do that, you have to empathize with them and let them know, I know what you might be thinking. And let me take that away for a second. And then people open up. It's crazy. Now, this I first heard about this framed this way from an author who's passed away named Terry Pierce. And I knew Terry a little bit. He wrote a book called Leading Out Loud. And he talked about when you're leading people, when you're presenting to them and appealing to them, you need to understand what their objections might be. So let's talk about some examples of what that might look like.
Well, I actually have one I'll throw out here. And I hesitate because we only use examples that we have. So it's not about like us or anything, but there, I remember specifically one time where we were having a conversation around cultural change at our office. And I was about to talk to our whole team and literally remembered you saying like, anticipate people's objections. So before I went in, I went into the other room for just 5 minutes and wrote down, hey, here's what I think the objections might be is, hey, you're going to think that this is the same song and dance that we've done before, but it's not, you know, like, when we say we need to change the culture this time, I know we've said that and we're on version 4. You got to believe me that this is different, you know? And I went through 3 or 4 different objections that I thought that people might, you know, position during our conversation, and just getting them out of the way early, it allowed people to like settle into the conversation, and it went way better as a result of just taking literally 5 minutes in the other room. And I just wrote down 3 or 4 or 5 objections. and presented those first.
And it makes all the difference. When we first started the Table Group 23 and a half years ago, I'm never quite sure how many it is. I got to do the math. But I remember when I'd go talk to a CEO and think about 23 and a half years ago, we were talking to them about organizational health and about culture of their organizations. I would always start by saying, first of all, I just want you to know none of this is touchy-feely. None of this is soft. We're not going to make you get naked or hold hands or do anything like that because I think I don't buy into any of that. This is about the bottom line. And I can tell you that the CEO's face would change markedly when he or she heard that because they were so used to consultants trying to sell them on kooky things. And I would just say, I can't stand that stuff. You probably can't either. And I just want you to know that. And they would go, honestly, they go, okay, good. I'm glad. Well, tell me what you want to do.
Absolutely.
And if I didn't do that, they would just be sitting there going, oh no, not another one of these.
Well, I actually was thinking about this from the perspective of like a team leader or sometimes when we pitch CEOs or at any level, really, one of the things that we talk about is one of the objections I hear all the time is, oh, is this another flavor of the month? If we go in and we talk about org health or they want to read the five dysfunctions or something, every single team leader in every single company has had like a book club or they've done something that was short term and had zero impact. And even as a team leader to go in and say, hey, you know, guys, I know we've done a number of initiatives around teamwork or organizational health or whatever it may be in the past. And I know some of those have stuck and some of them haven't. This time, like we're committed to it as a leadership team so you kind of like, I think what I mentioned earlier is sort of, there is an element of emotional intelligence. It's like you kind of have to put yourself in the other person's shoes and say, what possible reasons would they have to object to this? And then go out and try to eliminate those before you even present.
Yeah. And I would say the two of you are particularly gifted at this. I don't think everyone has emotional intelligence. So what would you say, how would you advise people that don't know what those objections might be?
I think what Cody did earlier, Tracy, is really good, and go into another room or sit down with somebody and say, hey, what might these people be thinking? And brainstorm.
Great.
Like what, if I were them, what would be some of the things I would be concerned about and skeptical about?
Mm-hmm.
And heck, sometimes you can even ask people. Before we get started, I'd like to hear, what are some of the things you're feeling right now that make you a little skeptical or suspicious?
Yeah, you know, I like that.
Because I'd like to talk about those.
Well, I think asking people is great. It's sort of like you need, if you try to go into any conversation without some contextual awareness of where the other person is, you might totally miss it. And so if you don't know what that is, if you can't intuitively or emotionally tap into how they might be feeling, then definitely go ask someone, even if it's a person that's going to be on the other side. Like, you know, and Pat, we've talked about this in our families, you know, even conversations we have with our wives or kids or any conversation to go in and go, hey, I know you had a great one around disciplining your kids or talking to them about a conversation you've had multiple times where you said, hey, I know I turn a lot of these moments into teaching moments and some of them get lost in the midst of all that, but this is so important. And I would like kick myself in 5 years down the road if I didn't have this conversation with you, you know?
Right.
And it's sort of like just allows the conversation to take a totally different tone than to just go right in without the context.
You know, it's funny. So Matthew and Connor, my sons, work here. And I said to Connor today, which we were setting up the podcast that you were in the room, Tracy, I said, hey, Connor, do you listen to these podcasts? And he, and he said, do you want me to answer that honestly? He said, and I said, I know it's hard. It's really hard. He goes, yeah, sometimes it's just too much dad for me. I said, I totally get that. I know how that is. You hear my voice all the time. And I get that. In fact, I said, Connor, it drives me crazy too to listen to my own voice. But there's things that we're covering I think you should be aware of. And there's lessons that I think you could benefit from. So maybe you could have one of your friends in the office listen and summarize it for you. But if I went in and just said, oh, I think you should do this, I find that working with my kids is probably the best practice I get for selling because pretty much they take nothing I say at face value.
You're constantly having to sell.
Right. Because they're like, oh, here you go again. And so I have to say, now I'm not telling you this because I like to nag you, or I'm not telling you this because I just want to change you because I love who you are. And what I'm about to do, I don't like doing either. And someday you're going to be a dad and you're not going to like doing this, but it's the right thing to do. And so that's why I'm about to tell you what I'm going to tell you. And suddenly they're like, okay, I'll listen to this. Versus just going, you have not taken the trash out again for the third time, you know? It's really important to think, where are they and what are they hearing?
Absolutely. I think this one, when we started talking about this concept, I've used this and told like our, you know, people that consult around this, certainly if you're trying to sell work into a business or into a leadership team, but I literally have taken this and implemented it across the board in my life. I love anticipating people's objections. I honestly think it's almost somewhat of a game now to try to articulate them like spot on, you know, like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm going into this conversation. Here's what you must be thinking, or am I off on that? And then start to have the conversation. I think it's critical.
Yeah. You know, I was talking about my wife when I first dated her, and that, you know, like, I remember the first time I kissed her. Well, I remember actually even before that, the first time I did a terrible job of selling myself to her because I was too much of a wuss. And I asked her if I could kiss her. And I'm not proud of that moment. And she was like, no, not right now. And so anyway, that was hard. And I was persistent, but not very forceful. But I might have said like, okay, I'm about to do something here. And I realize it could be a little uncomfortable, but I think that you're probably wondering if I'm a creepy guy, and I'm not. And I should have anticipated her objections, put those out there, broken down that barrier. And I'd have had a much better hit rate on that first one. So
yeah. So from team building to dating, this works yes. across the board.
Honestly, if you're dating somebody, you know, like, can you imagine asking somebody out and going, you know, I bet a lot of guys ask you out. You're very attractive, and you probably think they have bad intentions. And I understand that because I have a sister, and I would hate for guys that were not good to do that. I just want you to know I'm not one of those guys. And so I'm going to ask you out, and it's okay if you say no, but I just want you to know my intentions are really good. Now that sounds stupid, but can you imagine the difference between just going, hey, do you want to go out, and having her go, this guy might be a total douche.
We should have called this one dating advice. You know,
that's right.
This would have been better. Tips for dating.
My wife would say, you're the wrong person to give that out, Pat, but nonetheless. So anticipating objections. I love this concept. The second tip around sales is related to it, but it's you have to know that the most precious commodity in the world for people is time. So know that the biggest question in people's mind is, how long is this going to take? And we've found that to be true in selling our work to customers. People tend to think like, how much is it going to cost? Or tell me what it's going to entail. But in almost anything I've ever done, the first concern people had is, how much of my time is this going to take up?
Yep.
And if you don't address that, either by helping them understand the benefit versus the time, or that it can be quick, whatever you can do to give them a quick payoff is going to drastically improve a person's willingness to listen to you and be motivated to do something different. And it's so funny. I think that this was not true 30 years ago. I think 30 years ago, before all the social media and internet and everything else, people were a little more about, well, what's the price? And what's it? Now people are like, oh my God, I have no time. I've got no time. And so even when it comes to movies, like my kids do not watch movies. They want to watch a TV show. Now they might watch 6 hours of a TV show, but they don't want to commit to a 3-hour movie. And I think when we go to work with CEOs, they usually say, how much time is this going to take up? And is it going to be worth it? And if you don't address that up front, people are going to be sitting there thinking, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, I love this one. I think it's helping people identify that some of the other reasons that we think people don't buy in, it are the most precious resource is time. It's just, we have very little of it. And I love that you put it like in the framework of, a lot of people think it's, what's it going to cost? Or people, you know, another one that we talk about is it going to make me look silly? Or, you know, those are sort of the anticipating people's objections. But if you can say like, hey, in 30 minutes, let me just show you what, you know, where we're going to head with this working genius model or something. And just say like, I'm going to give you some level of value in a quick amount of time. Almost every person can say yes to if they think they're going to get something out of, or at least a morsel of it, a taste of it in 15 to 30 minutes. You've got your foot in the door. You have your hook. And then once you've demonstrated the value, I think they're in. And so yeah. I think it's really, really critical to talk about time.
I think about that in terms of like evangelizing people in the faith world too. Like if somebody said to me, hey, do you want to join a Bible study? I mean, and I'm very interested in the Bible. I love Jesus. And I would almost always shrink back because I'm like, oh, how often is it going to be? And how long is it going to take? And if somebody said, hey, in 5 minutes a day, you can begin to learn more, I'd be like, I like that. Now, the thing is, once I get started, then it's going to be easy to go deeper. But we make people commit to too much time up front. And whether I'm trying to convince my kids to do a chore or something like that, the other day we were like going to clean the house. And Laura said, hey, everybody, come on, let's all clean the house together. And I said, hey, in 15 minutes, let's see how much we can get done. And they got off the couch and said, okay, I'll give you 15 minutes. And I know it went longer than that, but they needed to know that it wasn't going to take up their whole day. And so if you can get people to start moving by showing them that they can do a lot in a short period of time, then they're open to more.
Yeah, you know, there's this interesting thing you and I both started. You know, when people talk about meditation or you know, like we got the app Abide recently, you and I, which is like a Christian meditation app. And what I loved about it is...
Helps people go to sleep or to reduce their anxiety. You can set it for, yeah. I know what you're going to... Keep going, Cody. I'm sorry.
Well, what I love about it is I've always thought like, oh, this would be... it's really important for me to spend 5 to 10 to 15 minutes a day in contemplative, you know, posture around something like that. But I just never did it. The idea of like making that a habit is so difficult because it feels like, oh, it's going to take so much time to do this. What they did in this app is amazing. And it speaks to what we're doing here, talking about is they said, hey, do you want a 2 minute one, a 5 minute one, or a 12 minute one? And I just started with the 2 minute one because I didn't have any time. But once the 2 minute one, I realized how good it was. Then you bump yourself up into the 5 minute one, and then you bump into, and I think the lesson there is universal. It's like, do what you can in that 15-minute cleaning session, or get your foot in the door with your team if you're trying to galvanize them around a new team building endeavor or something like that. Do something quick that demonstrates the returns, and then people will give you more time. If you can do something in 15 minutes that demonstrates value, they're going to give you more time. But if you ask for more time, you're not going to get any chance.
Right. Right. I should have said to my wife, hey, can I kiss you? I promise it'll be like 2 minutes. It'll be over in no time. She might have been, yeah, I'm in 2 minutes. I can give you 2 minutes. That was probably her whole objection because clearly she wasn't objecting to me. It must have just been the time.
Yeah, how do you say that? I just screwed that up.
If I knew then what I know now.
Exactly. There we go. That's perfect. I do a lot of stuttering on this podcast.
But isn't it crazy with the time? You know, when people come to your front door and they're going to pitch you something, if they go, hey, I promise I'll be done in 20 seconds. I feel like, okay, you got 20 seconds, but it's like, I'm sorry, I'm busy.
Totally.
So time is the most precious commodity always. So anticipate people's objections. And the most important thing that people are concerned about is how long something's going to take in order to get started. Right?
That's great. Okay. What's next? Okay.
The third one is, I call it use the threat of references. I say threat jokingly because you don't have to always provide references. I mean, you have to have them, but you have to be able to say there's other people that have been where you are and they could tell you about how good this is. And oftentimes you don't have to say, yeah, let me call them. But if they say, I have them for you, they're like, okay, you're confident enough to tell me you'd let me talk to other people.
I love this one. The way this is demonstrated most in my life is with my wife, because I will say the same thing repeatedly. And then somebody else will say the exact same thing and she hears it from them, you know? So I think in some way it's like, if you can say to someone like, hey, here's another leader, or here's a person, they went through this. It took no time at all and with demonstrated value. You said it, the way you said it earlier when we were chatting about this was nobody wants to be the first one. And right. So if you can say, hey, you know what? We just did this. Or I had a friend at another company or another organization or another team that did this, and it was so impactful and so powerful. People almost immediately lower their guard. And this speaks to what we touched on earlier, which is people don't want to walk away feeling like, oh, they were made a fool of. You know, like it's corroborating the value of something.
Yeah, and it's one thing to say to a CEO when we're working with them, you're going to like this. It's going to help. It's another thing to say, here's three CEOs at these companies who will tell you what the experience was like. And they are really fans of this. It worked well for them and they would tell you that. And you're more than welcome to call them. More often than not, you don't even have to call.
Right.
You go, oh, okay, if there's others who believe that. Gosh, when you're, that's why references at a job, when you go interview at a job and you're trying to sell them, you should say, here's my references. And I would love it if you would call them because they will give you a really good sense of who I am. And I promise you, they are going to encourage you to hire me.
Well, and before this sounds too like salesy, like someone's trying to sell a gig or something like that, this is just innate in human behavior. I mean, this is why so many people shop on Amazon is because you go online and it says like, hey, this is 5 stars. 10,000 people said this is 5 stars. And you just go, well, if it was good for them, it was, you know, it's going to be fine for me. And I think that this is a core part of like human nature is to say, hey, there are so many people. It doesn't have to be, oh, let me sell myself to this person. It's like, this is why we tell some of the stories around Working Genius and the way it's helping other teams and individuals is because it's like, man, you should hear this story about how this team engaged with this and what it did for them. And they can go like, oh, we should jump in. You know, so it's not just yourself. It's like what you're using or the concept. I mean, people want the 5-star rating and they want to know that it worked for other people.
I just thought of something. I hadn't planned this. When I'm talking to my kids about something, I'm trying to teach them something. I'll often say, Cody thinks so too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like I'll say to you, Matt, Cody, this is what Cody does. Here's what he thinks. Cause I know they're going to be like, okay, Dad, you're old and you're a dork. Cody's young and cool. And I admire him. If he says that, I will listen to it. And you know how I convince Laura of almost anything, my wife? I say, I talk to Tracy about it and she thinks it's a good idea. Because Laura will say to me, have you asked Tracy about it yet? So Tracy is my reference for anything with my wife, Laura. Cody, you're my reference for my kids. That's such a crazy thing. I hadn't even thought of that, but it's true. Matt, can you give me a nod of your head? Is it true that if Cody thinks it's a good idea, you're going to listen a lot more than me? Yeah.
Pat, you taught me this tactic years ago and I use it with my family all the time.
Oh, like how?
It works all the time. Oh, I'll say, I'll use someone they admire. They admire their Uncle John. They admire their aunts. So I'll say, Uncle John, hey, this is Uncle John thinks this is a good idea. And my kids are like, okay, it's not mom. So I'll believe it.
Right. And as a parent, that's a fine thing. We're supposed to hold up other people as examples. We shouldn't lament the fact that our kids have kind of got worn out on our advice.
That's right.
Because we all need references.
Yep.
And whether you're selling a session to a CEO or you're selling yourself in a job or you're trying to convince your kids to do something, references are a good thing. And sometimes all you have to do is put it out there that I'd be glad for you to talk to them. And they don't be like, okay, let me talk to John, right? Uncle John right now. Get him on the phone. That assumes that they know we're honest. So I think that matters. So always use the positive threat of good references.
And I think you're right, Pat. It's almost never where people need to validate the reference. It's not like they're like, let me give them a call. Just knowing that there are other people out there that find this valuable or that think this is a good idea, that almost is always enough for them to say, okay, well, I can opt in.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, the references, here's how that should have worked with Laura. I should have said, hey, I've kissed other girls before and it's been a really good experience for them. Here, give them a call. Here's their names and their numbers. I think they're going to tell you they were really glad they kissed me. You should feel really confident.
I'm not sure about that one. Yeah.
Maybe that's not a good example. The final one is have the courage to close. Now, I will tell you, I am not a good closer. And it really comes down to at the moment, if you really believe these things, you've anticipated their objections, you've helped them understand the time involved, you've let them know that other people feel good about it, it's good to ask them for action. And that takes courage because this is the moment where you might get rejected.
Right.
And you have to have the courage to put it out there. And some people are great at selling all the way to the close. And then they go, so let me know what you think. And they walk away.
Well, and this is why I think it's so important to believe in what you're selling, whether it's an idea to your kids or it's the product that you're pushing to your clients or
it's
yourself and service. Because at the end of the day, the only time that you don't have courage and conviction around it is when you know you're selling something that they don't need. If it's something that's going to help them, it's a service to them, and people are willing to either pay for it or you can push an idea to your family or your kids to say, like, I'm passionate about this. I think this is going to help us. And so let's do this. And if you're insincere or you're not convicted that this is the right thing for them, then how could you have the courage to close? And if you do, then, you know, like I know there are people out there in jobs where they have to sling products and services that they don't fully believe in. And that's just heart-wrenching. But I think as it relates to tips for sales in life, make sure that you're convinced and convicted about what it is you're presenting. And then I think it's easy at that point.
And you want them to act for their benefit.
Right.
I love this, Pat. My son, my youngest son, is looking for a job right now. And he's never worked a day in his life because he's always been focused on school and athletics. So I'm going to make him listen to this podcast. I think this podcast will be tremendously helpful to him because he will have to anticipate objections in interviews because he has no work experience. We were working on his resume and he has no work experience.
And see, that's a beautiful thing because you go into an interview and you're sitting there and the elephant in the corner is there, you know, and you should start by saying, first of all, I want you to know something. I have never had a job and that might very well be a problem, except I want you to know something. Everybody needs to have a first job. I'm so fired up about this and I'm going to work so hard. And I've watched my mom and dad work hard. Suddenly they're like, you've just turned a problem into an opportunity.
That's right.
Because you had the courage to put it out there before they even raised it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
I think that's so critical because it really is an underlying elephant in the room. If you don't address it, it just becomes bigger, right? So like everyone is thinking about it. But if you don't go right there and say, hey, I know I've not had work or this says I need 2 years of experience and maybe that's a deal breaker for you, but I can promise you I'm going to be the hardest working person you're interviewing or, you know, otherwise you leave it there and it just festers into being the biggest issue. And so it's critical. But I love that example, that the idea of like your resume and anticipating objections in a job interview. That's fantastic.
You know, going back to the courage to close, some guy wrote a book recently about facing rejection. Remember, Cody, we talked about this. He went out and he said he's going to go like get rejected. What did he say? Like 100 times?
I think it was 1,000 times. I wish I remember. He spoke at the same conference of you and he, his plan was to desensitize himself from rejection. And so he would go out and just like do really unorthodox things like go ask a stranger for $100 bill. Just so that he could get used to being told no to.
Because he said, if people can get over their fear of that moment of rejection, you know, people have often said in life, if you have no fears, what could you get done? And so he said, I'm just going to get over fear. You know, he probably went up to the most attractive woman he'd ever seen and said, would you marry me? And said, okay, I've got over that. I don't have to worry about that. And could I have a job paying $1 million to this company? No. Okay. But he said, I'm just going to get so used to getting rejected by asking people for amazing things. And I'm sure he had more success than he anticipated. But I think the courage to close is really, don't be afraid of being rejected. And that will give you the courage to make the ask.
That's great.
Yeah. So those are our tips for selling in life, in your family, with your friends, for getting a job, selling a service, selling yourself. Anticipate objections. Know that time is the most precious commodity. Use references or the very threat of them in a good way and have the courage to close. We would love to hear from you. I know that our listeners are going to go, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Or you forgot a huge one. Or you have great stories. And so we are out of time today, but we would love to hear from you. And we will look forward to talking to you next time. And we'll all be in the same room on At the Table. God bless.